A question: what do windmills have to do with amateur radio? The answer is that every year, on the second weekend in May, ham radio clubs all over the world descend on windmills. They set up their broadcast stations, they try and connect with fellow enthusiasts all over the world. And yes, it is the second weekend in May on our doorstep. No prize for guessing where the hub of activity is going to be in Cape Town. There is only one working windmill, and that is the newly reopened Mostert's Mill. And to tell us more about what's going to be happening there this weekend, it's a great pleasure to have on the line with us Rob Barham, who is the chairman of Cape Town's Amateur Radio Club. Rob, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Pippa.
Before we talk about what's happening this weekend, let's just talk a little bit about amateur radio in general. How big is the ham community in South Africa?
Okay. We're close to about 3,500 to 4,000 licensed amateurs, which is quite small by international standards, but we're quite active.
Licensed amateurs. What kind of licensing do you need, Rob? Is it like us running a radio station? We've got to apply to ICASA for a license to broadcast? Is it quite as complicated as that?
That's actually absolutely correct. The actual individual operators have to pass a technical examination, showing that they know the radio procedures, the rules around radio to maintain their own station. So there is a bit of an effort to get your amateur license.
I didn't realize that. You learn something new every day, Rob. I mean, radio has got a very rich history in South Africa. We saw some of the very earliest pioneering technology tested in this country. Edward Jennings worked on the telephone exchange in Cape Town and managed to transmit signals to ships nearby. I know in the Anglo-Boer War, we saw engineers sending up balloons trailing aerials to try and play around with this new technology. Is that something that the community here in Cape Town is aware of and sort of nurtures proudly?
Well, the amateur community is certainly aware of that. We're very proud of it, what has been accomplished in the country over the many years, even down to latest things like some of the satellites that had been launched, the South African satellites, which did have an amateur radio component into it that we could communicate through those satellites as they flew overhead. A lot of what we do, Pip, is also emergency preparedness training, and that's a lot of what we're going to be doing at Mostert's Mill. Mostert's Mill does not have any electric power, but it does have a large grassy area, and that's where we'll be operating, using various forms of alternative energy and trying to contact a lot of the other mills around the world who are doing much the same thing as we are.
How did this connection between mills and amateur radio come about? Rob, do you know? Or was it just something that's always been a thing on International Mill Day?
No, it's it started about 25 years ago in the UK and in Holland, and a few mills had their local radio clubs there. They have a normal open day, those mills in Europe, and the club started to operate, and gradually more and more radio clubs started to take part. We do a very similar thing in August, where we activate our local lighthouses, which are excellent places should there be a disaster, because lighthouses usually have power backups, etc. And in that time, our club actually goes to the Greenpoint Lighthouse and does a very similar type thing.
I know we've had a conversation about the lighthouse link before, so that's thanks for tying them together like that. Rob, as a matter of interest, what drew you to this activity, and how old were you when you first started getting involved in amateur radio?
Okay, I got my radio license when I was 22 years old, so that's going back at least 50 years.
Okay.
I've always had an interest in radio and telecommunications. And in fact, most of the chaps that do have amateur license do have some type of long history of interest in communications or electronics.
Okay. Rob, is it expensive or difficult to get started in this field? I mean, do you need a lot of equipment, or is it actually fairly easy to build or buy your own basic kit?
That's a difficult question, because it depends on how far you want to get into it. Just to get a basic amateur license and a small, what we would call a 2-meter handheld radio, you would get into it for, say, under R1,000. But, of course, over the years, one tends to build up, gets higher power equipment with more capabilities, larger antenna systems. I suppose it's like any hobby. The longer you get into it and the more you build up into it, the more costly, the more you've actually put into it.
Yeah, and the more you're prepared to invest in it, Rob, as you get older. But what if our listeners asking you to elaborate on what you said about emergency preparedness? Rob, I mean, I think a lot of people will have seen movies where the person with the ham radio kit is the guy who saves the day because he's able to transmit the emergency broadcast asking for help when all else around him has fallen to pieces. Is that sort of what you're talking about, or is there more to it than that?
No, that's exactly what I'm talking about. If we look at the fairly recent disasters, if I go back to the tsunami on Boxing Day in 2006, I think was, all the local communications around that part of Asia were destroyed, the ground stations. It was radio amateurs who got the first calls out internationally for help. A very similar thing happened more recently in Haiti. The ground stations, even the satellite uplink stations were destroyed. There was no infrastructure, but somewhere there's a radio amateur that can perhaps take his radio, connect it to a car battery for power, and get an aerial up and get the call out for help. So it is a backup form of communications and service to the civil power.
Okay, really interesting. Rob, another listener asking, what would you say has been the most exciting or interesting connection you've made with another radio operator anywhere in the world?
That took place in 1985 when I first contacted a radio station called W5LFL, who was orbiting the Earth in the shuttlecraft.
Wow.
And most of the NASA astronauts are licensed radio hams.
That's interesting to know. So you were able to have a conversation with somebody orbiting the Earth on a space shuttle. I mean, that just blows my mind that's possible.
Indeed. They had a small amateur station in the shuttle. It was very brief because the shuttle was only overhead for about 6 or 7 minutes. But to me, that was quite exciting.
Okay, so you might not be going quite that far this weekend, but any hopes or where do you hope to connect to on International Mole Day?
Probably most of our connections will be in Europe because they're on the same time zone as us pretty well. Trying to get through to the U.S. and the like, where they're probably still asleep while we're active, et cetera. So that's one of the problems we have with amateur radio is the worldwide time zone. So.
Fair enough. Okay. So it's all happening this coming Saturday. You said you'll be setting up on the lawns outside Mostert's Mill. Rob, if people listening to this interview are interested in becoming radio amateur users themselves or just learning more or watching you at work, are they able to come and watch you on Saturday?
Yes, certainly. Certainly. They're welcome to come to the mill. The mill does charge a small entrance fee. Basically, that's the only way they support themselves. Yep. We don't receive any part of that. We're just there. But if they want to come and look at the mill was just recently opened and is fully functional, so that's also a thing of interest.
Yep.
And we'll be on the grounds of the mill operating our emergency stations.
Well, thank you so much for filling us in. I'll give you some info about the mill after this. But Rob, I have to ask, what is the correct way for me to sign off to call sign ZS1SA? What should I say?
Okay, you would say ZS1SA. This is Pippa, 73s.
This is Pippa, 73s. Okay, ZS1SA. This is Pippa, 73s. Rob Berham, great to have you on the show today and wishing you all a fun day on Saturday.
Okay, we'll be there from noon until about 3 p.m. Thanks, Pippa.
Thank you so much. And so that's this weekend. If you want to go and watch them at work, just head yourself towards Mostert's Mill and you'll find them outside the mill. And I'm sure they'd love to talk to you about their equipment and who they've spoken to and what they're all about. But also just a heads up, I did check in with John Hammer of the Friends of Mostert's Mill earlier today. And the good news is that next weekend, the 18th, is going to be their first official open day where members of the public will be allowed to come and visit the mill and see what has been done there. Just a reminder, you need to join as a friend of Mostert's Mill in order to be able to do that. It's not sort of an open access, pay a single access ticket kind of event. You need to sign up as a friend of Mostert's Mill. It's a fee of 50 rand per annum for an individual or 100 rand per family. And once you've done that, you can then take the opportunity to take a look at what's been done there, rebuilding after the fire. That one is next weekend. The radio hams will be there this Saturday between noon and 3. And if you want to get more details about next weekend, simply visit mostertsmill.co.za.